Good afternoon. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Here to answer your computer and technology questions today, I am joined in studio by Tony Yang. Tony started Gig Computers in 1996 while studying computer science at UAlbany. His company began as a hobby in college and quickly blossomed into one of the largest PC retailers in the region. Tony manages networks for numerous companies and organizations, including our very own This Radio Station, WAMC, ranging from a few computers to hundreds. To join the conversation today and pose your technology queries to Tony, give us a call, 800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Tony, welcome back to Vox Pop. This is our first dance in Studio A together.
I know. It's great to be here. Thanks for bringing me in again here, Sarah.
Absolutely.
We're going to miss Ray, but great to be here with you.
Hopefully, I can manage to be nearly as grumpy. I don't think I can. It's not my on-air persona, don't you know? The phone number is 800-348-2551. Tony is here to answer your tech questions. What's been on your mind lately in the realm of PCs and cybersecurity?
Yeah, there seems to be a new wave of attacks around the country. So I would advise listeners to update their computers. So grab those Windows updates and as many of them as you can, grab them and get it installed on your computers to prevent some of these updates, to prevent some of these attacks that's out there right now. I mean, the latest hacks, you think about it, it's pretty scary. The Japanese steel company, which is one of the largest in the world, mm-hmm. Nippon Steel got hacked with a zero-day attack. Seattle airports just recently also had a cybersecurity attack. So there seems to be increased activity now around the country with cybersecurity attacks. So it's a good time to get your computers updated and give it as much protection as possible.
What do attacks like that look like? What are the perpetrators trying to gain?
Yeah, the intent of this is either monetary, or they're trying to steal data so they can sell that on the dark web. I forget to mention that the Canadian electric utility company also got compromised. Sometimes they ask for payments via Bitcoin. Other times they just grab your data and put it out there for bidding on a dark web. So when you see these emails regarding your personal data being available on the web, it's these guys who hacked into these large networks, pick up your information, and then sell it to other perpetrators that don't want to do bad things to your computer or to your network. So there's monetary and probably some political reasons as well.
What should people look out for? What are the first steps someone should take if they do get hacked? Like if the updates didn't save them from this, what should people do after that?
Yeah, most of the time, if you see a pop-up on your computer and it's anything resembles, you know, like a Microsoft pop-up that says, hey, you got to call in because we just found a potential virus or cybersecurity threat on your computer, not a good idea to click on it. Microsoft will never ask you to call in a 1-800 number and have you pay them any type of money to resolve a problem on your computer. So those are the typical things that happen on the computer and the beginnings of a cybersecurity attack is if you see a pop-up and you click on it, what happens is in the back end, your computer thinks that you're giving the permission for somebody to come into your computer. As long as you don't click on it, you're fairly safe, even mm-hmm. without some of the latest updates. So if you see a pop-up from anything, from your bank that you think might be your bank, which is not really your bank, or from Microsoft, don't click on it. Just close it or reboot your computer and start all over again.
What about, I've started getting, probably only in the last, I mean, certainly less than a year, I think, more spam text messages. And I just, you know, report junk and delete. Is that the proper thing to do with those?
If you get a link on your phone and it's from a place that you've never heard of, even if it's from a place that you think might be legit, look at the actual link itself. So on your phone, whether it's on your phone and your computer, take a look at it, because what these cyber attackers will do is they'll write in, the title of it might be Bank of America, but if you actually move your mouse cursor on top of it, it will tell you this is somewhat the site that you never heard of.
Right.
That's a sign that this is not a legit link that you should be clicking on. And the same thing on your phone. So most places will, again, not send links to your phone to have you click on it and provide any type of password. It's one of the most common cyber attack tactics out there.
And those links, just in case people aren't aware, they're often usually, not only is it a company you've not heard of, but it's kind of gobbledygook. It's not a legible, normal assortment of letters and numbers.
50 letters that doesn't make any sense at all. It's like a whole alien language out there.
1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Tony Yang is here to answer your technology questions. You can also email us, voxpop@wamc.org. And that's where we heard from Jen, who has a technology question. Jen says, I have a desktop I'm trying to hook up two monitors to. My desktop only has one HDMI port, so I tried using a USB-C cord, but it doesn't seem to work. Any suggestions? Is there anything like an HDMI splitter I could use? That's a question from Jen.
Unfortunately, I am not aware of any HDMI splitters. USB HDMI adapters usually do work well. So, Jen, maybe try a different brand out there. Like TP-Link makes a decent HDMI adapter. The other option that you have is, maybe, Jen, try another USB port. Sometimes the ports don't communicate well with a USB dongle. So it would be worthwhile to just try a different port on your computer. Some of the computers have different specs. There's a USB-C, mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, it goes on and on. So try a different port would probably be the simplest thing. If that doesn't work, you can always add another video card to your computer. So that's kind of the ultimate fix, right? You don't have to deal with the USB dongle anymore. And there are also video cards that has two HDMI ports on them. So there are other options out there in case you can't get the USB HDMI adapter to work. But try another brand, try another USB port. They're fairly easy to use.
800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Tony Yang is here. The email address, voxpop@wamc.org. And Dennis writes in and says, Tony, are you familiar with the Microsoft method to update non-compliant Windows 10 computers? I'm glad that made something happen. He says, I have seen YouTube videos of several people. They say it appears to work fine. This is from Dennis.
Yep. This is where Ray will look up at me, go, he might be shaking his head going, maybe you shouldn't answer that.
Oh, okay.
But I won't give you any specifics.
What is it like this? We're trying to get, what does it mean? We're trying to break something?
When you try to upgrade an older Windows 10 computer or a Windows 7 computer, if you want to upgrade that to Windows 11, Microsoft now has what's called an upgrade checker. It's a little piece of software that checks the specs on your computer to make sure that it's quote unquote compliant with Windows 11 operating system. And it's pretty stringent in some areas. Like you have to have a somewhat modern Intel CPU or AMD CPU in there, amount of memory. The BIOS has to be a certain type. The way to get around that. So to answer Dennis's question is, yes, you can get around it. I've done it. It seems to work just fine after you upgrade it. In fact, my laptop that I have sitting in front of Sarah right now is
don't
one
bring
of,
me into this.
is one of those computers. It wasn't compliant for Windows 11, but I've updated it probably 2 years ago, and I haven't had a problem. So, not getting into the specifics, yes, you can get around it. Googled it. It's not hard.
Yeah. So maybe those YouTube videos that we're not endorsing are telling you how to do that, Dennis. We're not sure.
You can save a few hundred dollars, and and mine seems to work just fine, actually.
800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Let's do one more email before we take our first break, and then we will launch into the phone calls. This is from Bill, who says, I'm hearing a beep 555 when booting and shutting down. The pre-boot diagnostics show the battery is only at 55% and recommends changing it. Will that clear the beep error code, or are they separate problems?
555.
It says, I'm hearing a beep 555 when booting and shutting down.
No, that sounds something that's really specific. I'm not sure what that is. Without seeing it, without more information, it's hard to diagnose.
It does say
that.
Dell Inspiron 5758 laptop, but I don't think
The battery level is at 55. Bill, what you might want to try is just take the battery out, clear your computer. One of the things I always remind users is, your computers have capacitors in there, and it keeps residual amount of electricity even if you shut your computer down. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it keeps some of the real basic things running so that you can, as an example, wake your computer up, meaning you can turn it on over the network remotely. So it's not, when you shut it down, it's not quite fully shut down. Mm-hmm. So what you might want to do is take the battery out, especially if you're on a laptop. Take the battery out. If you're on a desktop, unplug the power, and then push the power button a few times to completely clear the potentially residual electricity on there, and then start your computer again. See if that resets things for you.
All right, there you go, Bill. Excuse me. It's time now for our first break of this program. Tony Yang is here from Gig Computers, answering your technology calls. The phone number, 800-348-2551. We'll be back shortly and take your calls then. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Sarah LaDuke here in studio with Tony Yang, taking your technology questions. The phone number, 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. The email address, voxpop@wamc.org. Tony, are you ready to go to the phones?
Yes, yeah, let's go.
You are. Let's go to John in Catskill. Hello, John.
Hello.
Hi, John.
Can you hear me?
We can.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to ask, thanks for the program, by the way, and I just wanted to ask Tony, I'm doing a new build on a tower PC, IBM compatible. And I just wanted to know, because I haven't done a build in a while, how I get Windows onto it and what version of Windows you would think would be good.
Yep. John, love hearing that. You know, not too many people out there are building their own computers, so I love it. I always build my own computers. It just feels like building the car from the ground up, you know?
I wouldn't know, but I believe you.
Yeah.
It's like fun. It's like building a city.
I know. It's great, isn't it? So glad to hear that you're out there building your own computer. So just heading straight over to the Windows version, you definitely want to put in Windows 11. That's kind of the newest and the updated version of Windows. There's a new patch that's coming out, but you don't have to worry about that until after. The way to install it is you can download the entire ISO, which is basically a DVD image of Windows 11, and you can go to Microsoft's website to download that and install it on your computer. You can also burn a DVD if you want, put in a thumb drive, put in a USB drive, all kinds of different options.
They make waffle iron.
There you go. Yeah.
No.
So to get the actual installation media, it's free. You can download straight from Microsoft, and I probably wouldn't download it from anywhere else. Let's go to Microsoft and download it, so you know it's perfectly legit. Then you literally just run it on your computer, install Windows, and then do the update afterwards.
Okay, and when you say run it on your computer, because the computer is there to begin with, am I going to boot it from one of these drives?
Yep, you can go into the BIOS of your computer, and it should, any of the modern BIOS would allow you to set it so that you can boot off your DVD drive or boot
right,
off your USB drive.
With that.
Yep. So the just go into the BIOS and choose the media that that you're gonna have the ISO on, and it should start the installation process for you just fine.
Okay, and then the last thing then would be you said it would be a free download. Is it? I'm assuming I have to pay for Windows at some point.
Ah, right. Okay, getting to the other important thing. Yes, you have to buy a license for Windows 11. You should be able to find that on the web for probably about $100.
Okay, brilliant. And so just hunt around on the web for a license for Windows 11.
Yep. I believe the Stables or Best Buy also have them over the shelf if you want. There's nothing in it. It's literally just a number
right.
that you can activate.
Right, okay.
Yep. Actually, in fact, if you go to Stables or Best Buy, their Windows 11 boxes might come with a DVD as well. So, you know, something to consider.
Okay, I'll check it out. I've got a Staples nearby.
Yep. Good luck, John.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thanks
John. For the show, guys.
Sure. Enjoy your
bye-bye.
Your self-made computer. 800-348.
I will.
Good, great. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I have, of course, heard of that before. I'm acting like I've never even heard of it. I have heard of building your own computer before, but it's not something I've done.
I know. You know, in the older days, I mean, 30 years ago when I started this, almost every computer was custom built. Those were the good old days.
Oh, sure. Nostalgic for that. I believe you, Tony. I can see in your eyes that you really do miss it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Those were the fun days. It got to a point where custom building your own computer was costing more money
sure.
than to just buy a off-the-shelf Dell out there. So then, you know, then that whole business changed.
1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or voxpop@wamc.org. Ready for another call?
Yes.
Let's go to Eileen in Rosendale. Hello, Eileen.
Yes, hello. A few days ago, I got the prompt to update my computer. So I clicked on update, then turn off computer. And the computer never turned off for 2 hours, had to do it manually. And since then, all I have is a black screen with the little blue circle. Any ideas?
Oh, no. Sounds like a version of the that Windows, they call it the blue screen.
The blue screen of death.
Right? You heard
yes.
of that before,
Oh,
Sarah?
Yeah. That'll just
It's not a blue screen. It's not quite black. It's just very dark.
Yeah. Do you see any type of Windows screen as it's booting up before it hits that darker screen?
No.
Yeah, it almost sounds like Windows isn't booting at all, because you would see this initial, you know, loading Windows screen, and then if something doesn't go well, it could get stuck in various different places. But it sounds to me like you're not even getting there. That's very,
right.
very strange.
Sometimes it throws you that DOS-looking screen that's like open in safe mode.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
That's very unusual now yeah. in Windows 11, because it doesn't even give you that choice.
Right.
It just gives you this blue screen that says it's loading, and it just never gets anywhere. You might want to, as you're booting this up, try to hit F10 when you boot the computer and see if that gives you an option to boot into safe mode. And if you let it run, usually, now this isn't happening all the time, but usually if Windows doesn't boot into its normal state, after about 5 or 10 minutes of sitting there, it will ask you if you want to reboot it into safe mode. So that's an automatic process now in Windows 11. If you're not getting that, then you might have a slightly, you know, deeper issue here at hand that could require maybe some professional help. You can also, if you got a Windows 11 media, you can put that media in and have it do a repair for you. It's fun to do, but make sure you have a data backup first.
Sorry, Eileen, we didn't quite hear you.
Is that something that you buy, Windows 11 media?
you can download, John was just asking that last call. I mean, you can download that. So if you have another computer or if you use your friend's computer,
okay.
you can download the DVD image of Windows 11 and then just burn it onto a DVD. That way you can use that on your computer or download it into a USB thumb drive and boot it off the thumb drive if you know how to do that. So there are several different ways of doing this.
Okay. But is this unusual to happen after an update? Like, is it not safe to update when they prompt you?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. I will say it is not a common occurrence, but it happens more than people think.
And if it's going to happen, will it be after an update?
It happens after an update. You know, things just doesn't quite run like the way it used to because the new source code from Microsoft is creating just a slight incompatibility with your software. So things like that do happen, which is the reason why we don't always do Windows updates. We actually inspect it and make sure that it runs and it doesn't create a lot of disruption before we push that out to all the client computers. So it does happen, pretty rare. Unfortunately, you're one of those people that's experiencing that, Eileen. Hopefully you can get that squared away without too much headache.
And if she's going to hit F10 to see if that prompts a safe mode, at what point does she do that in a...
That should come up almost immediately. As the computer is booting, just keep on hitting that F10. Hopefully that gets you to some place. It sounds like a deeper problem. So best of luck, Eileen.
I also sent an email, so just disregard the email, please.
Got it. I already did. I was like, Eileen. Black screen. This is the same.
Yeah.
All right.
Right.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good day. Bye-bye. Good luck. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's a technology questions Vox Pop this afternoon. Tony Yang is here. Should we keep it rolling?
All right. Okay. Sounds good to me.
Let's go to Joy in Summers. Hello, Joy.
Hi there. Hi.
Hi.
I now use an old Microsoft Word Windows on a MacBook. How do I delete errors that I've typed into documents without having to hit delete, 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 delete? It takes forever and it's a pain in the neck, and I don't know how to do it another way.
Joy, you can, unless I'm not on the same page with you, you should be able to hold that mouse cursor down and then drag it all the way up to where you need to be and just delete the whole thing. Or you can hold down the shift key as you move the arrow key to select, as it's multi-select. You're selecting multiple areas of the word to delete it, so you don't have to push that backspace or delete button all the way back.
How do I tried it with my mouse and nothing works. Nothing goes on the screen.
Hmm. Yeah. Try using the mouse, using the cursors, the up, down, left, the right cursors on your keyboard. At the same time when you're holding down a shift key, that does the same thing as selecting with your mouse. So maybe the mouse function for some reason is disabled on your Mac, but you can use the keyboard in its place.
So you're saying that I should hold down the keyboard and then move the mouse over the words in the document I need to eliminate?
Yeah. So what you want to do is you want to hold down the shift button. And, well, first of all, put your mouse cursor to the beginning of where you want to delete. Once the cursor is there, hold down a shift key, and then use the right arrow to go as far as you need to. And then once it's all selected and highlighted, then push the delete key on your keyboard. That should take the whole selection out.
Well, thank you for that advice. It sure will make my life a lot easier.
All right, good luck, Joy.
Hope that works for you, Joy. Have a great afternoon. 1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Let's go now to Jen in Beacon. Hello, Jen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a 10-year-old who is itching for a PC. and we're a Mac family. And he wants to use it for gaming. And I see computers out there for sale that are very expensive. And I just don't know what things to prioritize. And yeah, I'd love your advice.
Yeah, gaming computers can get expensive. That's 10 years for sure.
That's about when, that's about the time that my son asked me to build a computer with him.
Oh, cool!
Another another one of these special moments in my life, right? My son is asking to build a computer with him. That's awesome. yeah, and he wanted to game on it, obviously.
Of course,
you know, that was the big thing. All his friends were gaming online. The thing to keep in mind when it comes to gaming is your graphics card, the video card, the graphics card is the most important part of a gaming machine.
Okay.
Most CPUs out there, so this the core components of a computer is you obviously got to have the CPU, the motherboard, the memory chips, RAM chips, and your hard drive. These are the core components of your computer, along with the video card. Mm-hmm. Most of the chips, whether it's made by AMD or Intel, are most of the time, I would say 99% of the time, they're more than capable of handling these games out there. What slows games down is the graphics manipulation. As it, the more popular the game, the heavier the graphic needs are. So you want to get most popular chips, the most popular graphics cards out there are made by NVIDIA. That's why NVIDIA now is the most valuable company in the world, because they make the best graphics and the fastest graphics cards. So I would get a mid-range graphics card, and unfortunately, Jen, it's going to cost you a pretty penny here, because they manufacture a good product, but they also demand a lot of money for it. But that's probably the best option out there. So get
around $1,000 or?
Oh yeah, $1,000 will get you a real good video card for your game.
A good one. And that's just the card for the computer.
Yeah, yeah. They got cards in the many, many thousands. But I think you can end up with a decent graphics card for about $500, let's say. $1,000 would get you a pretty nice one. The other thing to pay attention to is...
I don't think he needs that.
Yeah. I think in a few dollar range will probably be enough. And then get 16 gigs of RAM. That's the other real important thing. Okay. Get 16 gigs of RAM and use a SSD hard drive, not a mechanical drive. Although, I'm not even sure if anybody makes mechanical
SSD
drives anymore.
Okay.
So those are the three core components, right? A good graphics card, 16 gigs of RAM, and a SSD hard drive. The rest of it, you can almost use anything.
Great.
Any other questions, Jen?
Thank you so much.
Sure, of course. Good gaming to your son.
That's it. All right. Thank you.
Of course. Have a great day. You too. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We have a question from Nicole, who's emailed in it to voxpop@wamc.org and says, I have a Brother printer and a MacBook Air. I use the printer infrequently, so I keep it powered down and turn it on when I need to use it. Roughly every third time that I attempt to print, it won't connect to my laptop no matter what I try, including resetting the Wi-Fi connection, restarting the computer and the printer. I turn the printer off and try again the following day and it works. Did I get a lemon or is there a permanent way to fix this?
That's from
Nicole.
Yeah, Nicole.
It's so printer, that printer to do that.
That is got to be one of the most frustrating things. And it's not just with computers, right? It's with anything. Like if your car starts one day and the next day it just won't run right.
Well, and with printing, you never need to do it unless you really need to do it.
That's right. Yep. it sounds like there might be a driver issue potentially. So maybe go to Brother's website and download the latest Mac driver and install it. See if that makes a difference. I will also make sure that your MacBook is up to date. On top of that, the other possibility, Nicole, is you might want to just connect to the Brother printer directly. So instead of going through your house network, your Wi-Fi network, all of these Wi-Fi capable printers will allow you to directly attach. So in other words, it's got a built-in access point that you can attach to directly just for printing purposes. They seem to be more reliable. You don't have to worry about going through your house Wi-Fi network, which, I mean, it's unlikely, but it might have something to do with that. So if you can connect to the Wi-Fi connection that's on your printer directly and solve your problem, that's the way to go.
1-800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Time now for another break, but Tony Yang will be getting to more of your questions. So if you are Marta, Susan, Kate, May, Joe, and Scott on the phone, you've still got a chance. We're going to try to get to all of you. Personal challenge for the afternoon. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Vox Pop. I'm Sarah LaDuke in studio with Tony Yang from Gig Computers. He's here answering your technology questions. Let's jump right back to the phones, okay, Tony?
All right, sounds all good. Right,
let's do it. We're going now to Kate in Paradox Lake. Hello, Kate.
Hello.
Hello. Are you dropping boulders?
Yes.
Okay. Well, be safe.
Problem this. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I've all day long, like I would say 20 to 30 scam calls come into my Apple iPhone 14. They change the numbers constantly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it seems like no matter how often I block and delete, they just have a way of robo-changing another number.
Yeah.
And I don't know, since I block and delete every single time, how is there any way to stop this flow of all day long, like every 10, 15 minutes all day long?
Oh, Kate, I mean, if you can find a solution to that, you're going to be a trillionaire. You'll be the first trillionaire.
You'll have more money than NVIDIA.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it is so frustrating. They've put a couple of guys away for life sentence. They were accounted for 75% of all the robocalls in the country. So the government is trying to do something. There aren't any great solutions out there. They're trying to get this under control. One thing that you might want to consider is do what's called a screening process on your phone. So, in other words, what happens is your phone or the service Google Voicemail might be a good way to go. What it does is it screens the call for you so that it's not a robocall. And the person on the other side of the call has to input, like push the button according to your customization. It's testing for human intelligence. So they will have to push a button in order to connect to you where your phone doesn't ring. It basically gives you a shield, right? It doesn't ring to you directly yet. It rings to this other service that like Google Voicemail is providing. And then if they push the right button, then it rings to your phone. That might be a way to get around it. But boy, if you're getting one call every 15 minutes, that is very, very unusual. I may get a few calls a day.
Yeah, me too.
So your number might be out there on lots of these call lists. You know,
that I actually engaged in a conversation at one point with somebody, and I've determined that it's all coming out of a call center in Texas.
Hmm.
And it's all either solar, trying to sell solar, or Medicare.
Yeah.
They're total scammers.
Yeah.
But, okay. Well, I'm glad to know it's not just me.
It's not just you.
Yeah, definitely not just you. I mean, everybody deals with this. And the older your number is, the longer you have had it. Like, I've had my number. It's the same number for 30 years.
Yeah, I've got mine in 2022, maybe?
Yeah.
And, no, sorry, 2002. 2022 would be just very recently.
This is why some people routinely change their numbers.
Yeah.
But that also is not a viable option now because they're just recycling numbers. One person gives it up, they get signed to other people. So it's a problem. It's not just you. I feel for you, and I deal with the same stuff, just not at this frequency. So best of luck. Check, look at Google voicemail. It might just be a solution for you.
I have an Apple store near me, so maybe they can take me to the setting where I can put that, what you just said.
Yeah, it's called a phone call screener. They'll be able to do something for you.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate knowing this. Glad you were there. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Let us go now to Scott in Delhi. Hello, Scott.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Okay. How are you?
All right. Here's the $1 million question for you. Good. Here's my dilemma. It started on May 12th. I'm a truck driver. Every day I conference call with about 5 or 6 different people on the road. I'm a local guy.
Yeah.
May 12th, out of the blue, my phone, when I get merged into a conference call, my headset goes to like what sounds like an analog mode, not a voice over LTE or high def sound. So actions I've taken since May 12th is I've replaced my phone with the same model. I've replaced the phone with a Samsung S25. I've switched carriers from Verizon to AT&T. I've tried different phone apps. I've switched different headsets and changed SIMs, reformatted the phone, and I still have the same issue. Whenever I get merged into a phone call, my phone goes to what sounds like an analog, and I get cracking and popping noises in my headset. Thoughts?
Wow.
Could it be the fault of someone else's phone on the call?
I love troubleshooting stuff like this.
Go ahead, then.
It's like
Tony.
The weirdest thing, you know. and Scott, I wish you were sitting next to me because I'd be working on it for the next 3 days without any sleep trying to figure this out.
I've been working on it for 2 months.
Yeah, what an interesting problem. Now you have a you say you got a different headset as well.
I've tried just yep. I did a different headset as well.
I mean, it almost sounds like it's the conference. Are you using like a conference, like a free conference software or something? How do you do the conference? Do you call each other or do you use a third-party service?
Right. So just basically your phone app that's on your phone. Like I use a Pixel 8 Pro. So if I'm dialing out, I use just the Google app.
Gotcha.
And my friends are on Samsung phones. So we're just using a regular calling app that's on the phone. That's allowed us to do conference calls for 10-plus years.
Yep. Wow! What an interesting problem. Okay, I'm going to offer instead of me. You know, I obviously don't have all the time to try to troubleshoot this with you. But here's an alternative that you might want to consider. There is a free service out there. It's called Free Conference. You can literally sign up for a free account and make as many conference calls as you want. It will actually keep track of it for you. Record it for you and have pretty much as many as I think it's up to like 50 callers in at the same time. I use it. A lot of my clients use it. If you sign up, they'll provide you with a number that's just for you. And when you call in, it joins it all together. That could potentially solve your problem because now instead of using your own phone to conference everybody in, everybody just calls the same number and it connects all of you in a huge conference pool. That could potentially solve your problem and make your lives easier because then nobody has to initiate that conference call. You just call in at a scheduled time. So check out Free Conference.
Gotcha.
That could be a simple way to solve this problem for you. Sidestep this problem. But boy, Scott, if you're around, man, call, you know, get in touch with me because I want to take a look at that. That's really interesting. I love these interesting problems.
I'd love to reach out to you. If you want to reach out to me inside, I can give you my phone number and we can chit chat.
Yeah, well, don't give it on the air.
I won't give it on the air.
Yeah, send the station an email, and then Ray is usually and Sarah.
Yeah.
They're good about forwarding those emails to me, and I'd love to take a look at that because that's. Wow, what an interesting problem.
Yeah, if you email voxpop at wamc.org, I'll get that over to Tony Scott.
But you use the free conference. It really works well, and I never had a problem. We've been using that for decades.
Okay, appreciate the info. Check it out. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Let's go now over to Susan in Rhinebeck. Hello, Susan.
We were on
Susan, Amazon. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, hi. Hi.
Hi.
I wanted to ask you about Dropbox. I work on a MacBook Pro or a MacBook Air, either one, but I keep getting a notice that says you need to re-up, pay for more storage. You need 2 gigabytes. You've gone over your Dropbox storage.
Yeah.
How do I check to find out if I have gone over my Dropbox storage?
Yeah, Susan, you should be able to just log on to the Dropbox webpage, and they'll tell you exactly how much you're using. Even in the software itself, there should be a data byte count on there.
I don't really use Dropbox.
You don't use Dropbox?
I mean, I used to use it when I was sending videos.
Yeah.
But Dropbox software, so the Dropbox thing, so I'm so I need to look at Dropbox, which is in my dock, right?
It can be in the browser,
so
or
if
as
you could
a...
walk me through that. It's in my
It can be
a Dropbox
application on your computer, or you could access it through a web browser. Either way.
Okay, so it's in my dock, but I haven't used it for a long time, but I keep getting these. So when I go on to the drop, excuse me?
You're all right. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, so when I go in there, it doesn't have much stuff because I cleared it out.
Yeah.
How can I tell?
Well, one of the things that Dropbox does when you first install it is it gives you this backup function that most people are not even aware of. What it does is just automatically backs up certain folders on your computer, whether it's Mac or PC, onto their network, so they have a copy of that data out there as a way to back up your data. So it's probably it sounds to me like it's probably continuing to do that even without you knowing. Susan, if you're not using Dropbox anymore, just uninstall it. You know, uninstall it, get rid of it. No reason to have it if you're not going to use it anymore. I will just make sure that you back up all the data.
I mean, I don't know when I might use it, but I haven't used it for a while.
Yeah.
But it's talking about this little note that it sends me every time I log on to my computer is like, your things are not going to be saved to the cloud and blah, 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 all that scared stuff. And I wonder, is that true? I mean, does it go through Dropbox?
Yeah, I mean, that's what it sounds like, unless you're getting, one of those cyber attack links, which doesn't sound like it. Dropbox does do that. You know, that's how they get people to sign up for free, with the intent that you're gonna pack up the your data limit, and then you got to pay them for a additional storage. So that's pretty normal what you're going through. I would just open up a browser, open up your Safari and go to Dropbox.com, log into your account and take a look at it and see what's in there. And then just remove the things that you don't want on there if you want to continue using it. So a pretty simple process to try to eliminate some of the data that you're not using anymore so that you don't have to pay them. So go to Dropbox.com, log in, and take a look at it. And whatever you do online gets synced to your computer. So if you just clean it out online, give it about an hour, a couple of hours, it should all synced up to your Mac just fine.
Yeah, I cleaned it out a couple of weeks ago, but I just logged into Dropbox, and it's telling me that your account's out of storage. Centralize your photos, personal docs, work files, blah, blah, blah. Dropbox Plus has all the storage you need to grow.
Yep.
And they want to charge me whatever it is for. It doesn't even have it just says, how much do you want? 2 gigabytes.
Yeah.
It says I'm using 896 gigabytes of 2 gigabytes.
Oh,
well,
wow.
If I'm only using, it says I'm using 896.05 gigabytes of 2 gigabyte space.
Yeah, that's only halfway. That's strange. Maybe you are having one of those.
I'm not good with the numbers. Is 8.9605 gigabytes less than 1 gigabyte?
No, that's way more. I think you have 1 terabyte, not 1 gigabyte. 1 gigabyte is like, that's...
No, it says right here, I'm reading it, basic, 2 gigabytes. Using 8.9605 gigabytes of 2 gigabyte space is your current plan.
Oh, wow. Okay. So,
they're telling me that I need to get, it's way over.
Yeah, it's way over. Right? It is way over. I wonder if there's like a new...
How's that possible?
Yeah.
Don't
yeah,
know.
Something is in there. Go through your mailbox and go to your storage and see what's in there. I mean, if they're reporting that, it's probably not, you know, that's not just them making up a number. That's how much data is in there. It's probably just got accumulated over time. Keep in mind that Dropbox keeps versions of your data. So just because you delete it, they still have a copy of it, and you got to go in there and clean the old versions of your data out as well, not just what you currently have on it.
So where do I clean that out? I don't really, you know, I'm in my 70s. I'm not really, I use my computer all the time for work, but I don't really know how to go in there and clean that out. Where do I do that?
Yeah, so on the Mac software, I don't have the Mac software in front of me at the moment. If you open up the Dropbox software that's on your Mac, it will be in there somewhere that tells you what the versions are. So you might think you've deleted it, but it's actually still sitting there.
So I open Dropbox in my dock. I open the logo, the Dropbox. And there's not very much in there, and there's nowhere where it tells me how much each thing is.
Yeah.
Is there?
When you log in.
I mean, there's
in,
a couple of docs. There's. I just don't know where it is.
Yeah. Susan, if you want to shoot the station an email, I'll follow up and I'll give you screenshots of where you should go to. And try to get this resolved for you.
Oh, okay, great.
All right.
That would be great, Tony.
Yeah, that way we can hopefully get another call in too. I would definitely follow up.
Yeah, right, I understand. Okay, email you at...
voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org.
Right, I know that.
Oh, okay, great.
Okay, great.
Just
thank you.
Sure.
Thank you so much. Oh, I thought he meant to email him. Okay.
Just us, and we'll forward it over to him. Thank you, Susan. Good luck.
Oh, thank you so much.
Of course.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. We are out of time. We set a goal of getting to all the calls, and we didn't hit it. We're very sorry to Marta, Will, May, and Joe. Very, very, you know, the clock is the boss. We can't extend, and we apologize for leaving you on the line. This is the end of the show for today, and I want to thank Tony from GIG for being here. Thank you, Tony.
You're so welcome, and thank you for inviting me back here. This is always fun.
Absolutely. Support for Vox Pop comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, providing more than 40 miles of trails for nature therapy and exploration beyond the shore of Lake George. HikeLakeGeorge.org. Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, working to spread peace, love, and happiness with small batch handcrafted infused sea salts, pepper blends, and specializing in black garlic, rollingrocksalt.com. And Mass Mocha, presenting Saturday Night Live's Sarah Sherman on stage in North Adams, Massachusetts on July 19th. More at massmocha.org. Thanks for joining us today on Vox Pop. Our engineer was Zach Malloy, of course. Your calls were answered by Ed Rosen. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Tomorrow, the gardeners return. We will talk to you at 2:00.